Okay, we left off yesterday. We're still talking about our introduction to Hilchos Chanukah. So we're still trying to figure out how we ended up with the Yom Tov Chanukah in the first place, how we ended up with new mitzvahs of Neiros, Hal, etc. So we pointed out yesterday that there was a machloikis, Harishonim, what problems have to be overcome before we can institute new Yom Tov, before we can institute new mitzvahs. So according to the Ramban, there's a problem of a Baltosif that must be addressed. According to the Rashba, there's not really a problem with Baltosif, because whatever is initiated by the Chazal is not subject to Baltosif. According to the Rashba, it's more of a problem of Eila Mitzvahs, that a Navi can't institute something new. So the Nafkamina being was Chanukah problem. According to the Rabban, Chanukah was a problem. You have to deal with it. You have to overcome the halachic obstacle to instituting Chanukah. According to the Rashba, it was never a problem. It wasn't Alpi Navi, it wasn't Bruch HaKadosh. It was never a problem in the first place. But no matter how you slice it, the Purim was for sure a problem. The Gemara's favorite Purim was a problem. And the Gemara concludes that Purim was not a problem because it wasn't really a Hosafa. It was rather the proper halachic response based on the Kavachoma that we spoke about yesterday, as Yashimosha, etc. Then we moved on, the end of yesterday, Shia, to the next problem. So even if we have justification to institute Chanukah and Purim, why do we have to keep it for? So what does that have to do with me? The Torah doesn't say to keep it. So what's the Mechayev for me to listen to the Chachamim? More of a general sense, not just the Mechanech HaPurim, in general, what do I have to listen to the Dinei Rabbanim in the first place? So we pointed out, there's a Machlekes HaRishonim about this, the Rambam and the Rashba wrote the opinion that the mitzvah of Losasim warrants, requires this. The Torah says, you're not allowed to rebel against the Chachamim, Losasim, the Dovah Shagiru Chayim, the Smos, the Rambam, the Rashba hold. That refers not only to interpretation of pre-existing dinim deraisa, but it refers to legislating new dinim as well. So anytime the Chacham institute anything, and that mitzvah say, Mrs. Losa say, whatever the Chacham say, you're required to listen to. That's the mitzvah of the Torah of Losa, sir. But we left off yesterday with the Ramban doesn't say that. The Ramban and Sefer Mitzvah says quite clearly, not that way, that the mitzvah of Losa, sir, applies to pre-existing dinim deraisa. That means the Chacham interpret dinim deraisa, but they don't have the right to institute new dinim to Rabbanon. At least Losasa doesn't teach us that. So the question is, where is the source? What's the mochar, according to the Ramban, for the requirement of listening to the Chachamim in general? So if you look at the Ramban in Parshas Vaschanan, that Ramban that we started out with, it's clear from the Ramban what the answer. Lefi Nizdaik, it's clear what the answer to this question is. The Ramban breaks down all the Rabbanans into two categories. There are the Rabbanans that are B'Torah Siyagim, and there are the Rabbanans not B'Torah Siyagim. What does that mean? So the Rabbanan B'Torah Siyag means that the Chachamim institute something to protect us from violating a din derayis. So let's say, for example, the Chachamim made a gezeira called mukta. Why did they make a gezeira called mukta? So if you're going to move mukta, so then that's going to lead you to other Yisurim and Shabbos. That's a siyag. But let's say the Torah says you're not allowed to eat besar behemah that's cooked together with milk. So the Chachamim said not only you're not allowed to eat besar behemah cooked together with milk, you shouldn't even have a chicken and cheese sandwich either. Because you have a chicken and cheese sandwich, next thing you know, you can eat bas and b'chalof together. You're going to violate a din deraisa. That's a din mederabban. It was instituted as a harchok, as a siyag, as a gzeira. So the Ramban alludes to the Gemara in Maseches Yevamos in the second parak, where the Gemara tells us that in the realm of gezeiros, so of course the Chachamim have the authority to institute gezeiros. Of course we have to listen to gezeiros. That's one of the dini haTorah called the Shmartem es Mishmarti. The Torah says you have to make a fence around the Torah. Shmartem es Mishmarti. Asu siyag l'Torah. Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Asu siyag l'Torah. That's a dini deraisa. So asu siyag l'Torah has two components to it. There's asu siyag l'Torah as an individual. Let's say I know that there's a particular place. If I go to such and such place, I may end up being nichshol in a certain aveira. I know that this place is going to lead me to speak lashon hara. I know that this place is going to lead me to do improper things. So the halacha is you're not allowed to go there. So you're not allowed to associate with such things. If you personally know that this is going to lead you to do an aveira, so each individual has an obligation to make siyagim for himself. Each person has to know themselves and realize if every time I hang out with these same guys, I always end up talking lashon hara. So don't go there. So don't go find yourself another group of friends. Asu siyag l'Torah. So that's on an individual basis. But then there's also an obligation upon these, an obligation upon the two. But there are certain gezeiros that are universal. It means that it's understood that if we let people play with pencils on Shabbos, next thing you know, people are going to be writing on Shabbos. It's understood if people are going to be eating chicken and cheese together, next thing you know, they're going to be eating cheeseburgers together. It's understood that A leads to B. It doesn't always lead to B. It doesn't mean every single time A leads to B. But sometimes it leads to B. So the Chacham have to size up and have to figure out is there enough of a chashash that A is going to lead to B? If Chazal feel that there is enough of a concern, then that becomes subsumed under the din d'oraisa, v'shmarat v'es mishmarati, and we are mechuyev to make mishmaros, the mishmarati, we're mechuyev to make mishmaros, we're mechuyev to make siyagos on a level of d'oraisa. So the Ramban is quite clear that his whole discussion with the Rambam is not about gezeiros, it's not about siyagim. There was never a question that the Chacham had the authority to make gezeiros. Proof positive, says the Ramban, the Gemara wakes up in the period between Bais Rishon and Bais Sheni, raising an historical question: how did the Chacham institute Purim? How come nobody asked about Shlomo HaMelech didn't make gezeiros? Shlomo HaMelech didn't make a gezeiros, you're not allowed to carry in a certain place that minotaur you're allowed to carry in. David HaMelech didn't make gezeiros of Yichud. The Torah says only certain things is us Mishum Yichud, and David HaMelech extended the Yisur of Yichud. But that was the first base in history since Matan Torah that ever added on any din d'rabban. That's ridiculous, says the Ramban. Of course there are gezeiros. Everybody knows there are gezeiros. Moshe made gezeiros. Yeshua made gezeiros. Shmuel made gezeiros. Everybody made gezeiros. So comes the Ramban and says, gezeiros was not the discussion in Megillah Daf Yudalad. Of course the Chacham had the koyach in the realm of Yisurim. What the Gemara was raising a question in Daf Yudalad was, which was really unprecedented in Jewish history, was a new mitzvah midirabbanan. There was a mitzvah called Kriyas HaMegillah. There was a mitzvah called the celebration of Purim. That tachat didn't exist. And by Svisha, no basis before that, instituted a new mitzvah midirabbanan. All the mitzvahs of Shlomo HaMelech, let's say the mitzvah of the Tilas Yadayim. So the mitzvah of the Tilas Yadayim was not an independent mitzvah saseh. It was a gzeira to protect us from Tuma V'tara of Truma. So he formulated by saying, do a positive action of washing the Tilas Yadayim to remind people about the significance of Tuma V'tara, and hopefully that will protect the Kedusha in the Tara of Truma. That was the original gzeira of the Tilas Yadayim. Well, let's say Shlomo HaMelech made a gzeira that although Minat Torah you're allowed to carry in any area that's surrounded by walls, but the Rabbanim, if it's a public kind of an area, it's like a lobby of a building or something, so you're not allowed to carry there. Gezeir, if you carry there, you may come to carry in Rishas Sarabim. So what do you do to fix that up? So you make an Eir Chatzeris. You make all the members of the apartment building all join together to make it into one big happy family of Bachamatz, and you make a bracha on Mitzvahs Eiruv. So although it was couched in terms of a mitzvah, you make a mitzvah, you make a bracha, you make a shek yidishan, mitzvah al mitzvahs Eiruv, but that mitzvah was not a mitzvah in of itself. It wasn't a positive mitzvah. It's a negative mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that was instituted to protect some din d'oraisa called otzah, to protect some previous existing din d'oraisa called shmiras truma b'tahara. So everything that was instituted until the days of Purim was all b'taras los essays. In the days of Mordechai v'Esther, an innovation in Judaism started, that they instituted a new mitzvah. What is Purim coming to protect? If I don't keep Purim, what's going to happen? Well, I'm going to be Michal Shabbos. I'm going to marry a non-Jew if I don't keep Purim. Well, what's Purim coming to protect? What's the gezeirah? What's the siyag dimension of Purim? The answer is there's none. And that's exactly what's bothering the Gemara. So how dare we institute a new mitzvah? What gives us the right to do so? So what's the answer to that question? So that's the Gemara. So the Kal v'chomer. What the Ramban clearly understood, the Fidei Snaiti, is as follows. That Kal v'chomer not only teaches us that we're allowed to institute Purim, but it teaches us that we're what? We're required to institute Purim. What the Gemara is really saying, according to the Ramban, is that all the mitzvahs to Rabbanon, not the Yisurim Dovah, the Yisurim Dovah are based on Siyav, Shpatis, Shmati, but all the existing mitzvahs to Rabbanon must reflect some kind of a din d'oraisa. In Ochinami, the Chacham have no authority to make Yesh Me'ayin a mitzvah to Rabbanon. If the Chacham institute, everyone should stand on their heads, and there's nothing gained by that min HaTorah, then you're not allowed to do it. That's Taka Bal Tosef. That's an inappropriate use of the power of the authority of Chazal. Every time the Chazal make a mitzvah derabbanan, what they're really doing is they're showing you there's some kind of a chi of deraisa, there's some kind of a kiyum deraisa, there's some kind of a remez mitzvah, there's something involved on the level of deraisa, you're accomplishing something with deraisa. That's the notion of mitzvahs derabbanan. Mitzvahs derabbanan are not independent things, just the Chum said so, do it and fine. No. According to the Ramban, maybe that's the case. But according to the Ramban, every derabbanan, every mitzvah derabbanan must reflect a mitzvah deraisa. So, let's think, go through the list of all the mitzvahs derabbanan that we know, and let's see, is this theory correct or not? So you make me a list. How many? People probably think there must be hundreds and thousands of them. Mitzvahs derabbanan. How many are there?
Seven.
Not even. Not even seven. What do I mean, not even seven? Well, half of those seven are really Isurim, are really rooted in Isurim. It's Erevin, right? That's one of the seven. That's not a mitzvah derabbanan, that's a mitzvah to protect the Issa deraisa. Okay, next, we're down to six. That's the bad one. Without the six. The Tilas Yadayim, that's also a gezeira. That's not really a mitzvah. So without the five. Okay. Chanukah, we know what the answer to Chanukah is. Chanukah is a kiyum deraisa of az Yashem Moshe. Good. So far, so good. Purim is a kiyum deraisa of az Yashem Moshe. So we got three more to go. What are the other three? but the other three mitzvahs are abundant. There are only seven altogether. Two of them we disqualified immediately because they're Isur Moriah. The two of them we explained away because they're Chanukah Purim. One of them is Hallel. Good, thank you very much. Hallel is also, okay, because Akiyam D'Araisa, either Akiyam D'Araisa and the Ramban happens, though it's Akiyam D'Araisa of Simchas Yontif, or Akiyam D'Araisa of Hallel Haneis, whatever it is, okay, fine. So we're down to how many more? Doing the math? Two more. What are the other two? Now look, is there Shabbos and? The Eftishin is all part of Erev, it's all part of one. Birchas Hananin, right? I think those are the seven. Okay? So, Birchas Hananin, anyone learned Brachas with us last 2 years ago? 3 years ago? Okay? We get enough time on that, right? Birchas Hananin, according to some, is actually the Araisa, it's a Kim. Even if it's not a Chiv Araisa, it's a Kim Araisa with the prayer Shua, with the beginning of Ketz Mabarak, good. We did that. Been there, done that. Okay? What else? Neir Shabbos. That was the last one I was waiting for. Neir Shabbos. Is that just Tam and Mitzvah Dirabon the Chum just made up Yesh Me'ayin? Everyone should light candles on Shabbos? What is it? What's it a Kiyam of? Of Einik Shabbos, which is the Mitzvah B'Dibre Kabbalah, which is part of the Mitzvah of, the Ramban writes, is part of the Mitzvah of what? Of Zohar. Zohar means to make Kiddush and to make Shabbos a special day and positive actions. So everything you do to enhance the Zechira Shabbos becomes subsumed under the category of Zohar Shabbos Shabbos L'Kashel. So it's true Min HaTorah, you don't have to do it. It's true when the Rabban Shalom told Meshur Bein, the Zohar Shabbos Shabbos L'Kashel, they weren't lighting candles necessarily in the Midbar, but they weren't reading the Megillah on Purim in the Midbar either. So reading the Megillah today is an expression of Aziyah Shemoshah. Lighting Shabbos candles is an expression of Zohar Shabbos Shabbos L'Kashel. So the answer to the dilemma, according to the Ramban, why do we have to do Dinim D'Rabbanan? The answer is, if it's an Issa D'Rabbanan, of course you have to do it, because that's Mishmartis Mishmarti. If it's a mitzvah derabanan, the answer is, you're right, you don't have to do it as a mitzvah derabanan. You have to do it because every mitzvah derabanan, by definition, is part of what the Torah requires us. Either b'tar is chiyah, b'tar is kiyah, whatever you want to call it. So that's the feeliest, I think, the simplest answer to the Shittas Ramban, based on the words of the Ramban in Tarshish Vaschan. Rebbe Chanan develops a whole different mahalach b'das Ramban, which is important not only in terms of interesting interpretation of the Ramban, but it's important in terms of machshava as well. Usually we say the halacha part of Shia first, then the machshava. So today we'll say the machshava part, and then we'll talk about halacha afterwards. So Rabbi Chanan, in the beginning of the second chelak of Kevet Shirim, he has a kuntras that's called kuntras divrei seferim. So kuntras divrei seferim is basically a halacha kuntras written all about these kinds of topics. Why do we have to listen to chachamim? What are the limitations of the chachamim? When can the chum oikir davar Torah? When can they not? So in Kuntras Divrei Sofer, he addresses this basic question. According to the Ramban, why are we listening to Dinim D'Rabbanan in the first place? The Ramban develops the following yisod. It's a basic fundamental yisod, which is rings true. Whether or not this got in the Ramban, it doesn't matter. But the yisod is obvious. Says the Ramban, there's a basic fundamental yisod that yisodos that every single human being who enters into this world is obligated to perform. Jew, non-Jew, male, female, adult, child. And what is that? What's the basic mechayev of every single person in the world? Lasas ratzon Hashem. That's the mechayev. Person is created by the Ribbono Shalom, so the basic chiyuv of every single human being, Jew and non-Jew alike, is lasas ratzon of habayri. That's what we have to do. So now the question becomes a little bit tricky. What exactly is ratzon habayri? How do you find out? How does a person figure out where ratzon habayri is? So here the answer is as follows. There are two dinim, bris kavod. There are two different types of ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are certain ratzons of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells me explicitly. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells me what his ratzon is, then I know exactly what it is. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told all human beings in the world what his ratzon was. He commands that all human beings observe the Shabbat Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. That was B'Torah's. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Megala, his ratzon to Moshe Rabbeinu, to tell the whole world, universally, that everybody has to know, Jew and non-Jew, everybody has to know the Shabbat Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Megala, his ratzon to us, in an additional way. He told all of Klal Yisrael, in addition to Shabbat Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, another 606 mitzvahs for you to keep. That's my absolutely explicit ratzon, HaBayrei. So of course we're mechuyev to do that, because that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. But says Rabbi Chanan, then it gets a little bit trickier. Sometimes you have another level of ratzon. There are certain things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't say explicitly to us, but we have to figure out on our own. We have to be smart enough to figure out what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants of us, even though he doesn't tell it to us. They always give the famous mashal. Everyone who's in the Shia knows. What's the mashal at this point? Garbage. Yeah, good. Throwing out the garbage. Half an elf of dollars. So any young married couple will appreciate this. Some of the older married couples, put myself in that category, will also appreciate this. The following mashal. Okay? Here's the mashal. Guy gets married, finishes Shea Baruch, the first night, things are calming down. So his wife says in a very nice, pleasant voice, Can you please, darling, honey, whatever you're, please throw out the garbage. So the guy's very, you know, cooperative. Sure, he's been waiting all these years to throw out the garbage. So he's never swearing. Never, didn't know where exactly he put the garbage all the years in the dorm. But finally, he takes the garbage and he throws it out. Gavaldic, beautiful, wonderful. The next night, his wife asks him again, can you please don't forget to throw out the garbage. Throws it again. 2, 3, 4 nights like that. She asks him to throw out the garbage and he does. And beautiful, thank you very much. Wonderful. Then, the next week, she stops asking him to take out the garbage, so the apartment begins to look like the dorm looked, so it piles up, and then the next night, he doesn't throw out the garbage. So finally, she turns around to him and says, you know, how come you didn't throw out the garbage? So what's his response? You didn't tell me to. You didn't ask me to. How could I figure? How did I know to throw out the garbage? So that's end of the clip, okay? Now, what happens at that point? So what's pshat? What's the tainus? What's the tainus? So he taina is that you didn't tell me to, so therefore I was potter. What's hataina? Hataina is you should have figured it out on your own. Why should you have figured it out on your own? The first night that we were married, so he didn't really know me that well. How long did we go out for? We met at some Wire Connects event, we met out a couple of times. How well do we know each other? So I understood that I had to explicitly tell you, take out the garbage. We've been married for so long, married for a week already. Right, imagine that, if now you would tell your wife, I didn't know you wanted to throw out the garbage. Imagine. 25 years later, a guy says that he didn't know he was supposed to throw out the garbage. So the wife is very insulted. But you didn't know. You know who I am. You know what I want. You know what makes me happy. So for nights, he should throw out the garbage. So she has a good time now. So Havdol Alef Havdolos comes to Rabbi Shalom and says to us, there are certain things I'm going to tell you explicitly, and then there are other things that you should know me well enough. You should be able to figure out what I expect of you, what I want you to do, how I want you to react in certain circumstances. I don't have to tell you everything about Rachel Bitcha Ketana. How are we going to know that? How does a person ever reach that point of understanding, you know, a person is married, so he gets to know his wife after a few days, a few weeks, a few months, a few years, he gets to know his wife. People are complex, but they're not that complex, they're not that complicated. So he knows pretty much what makes his wife tick, so he figures out what she wants. To understand the Rabbi Shalom, that's quite a feat. No one can really understand the Rabbi Shalom. It's very, very difficult to understand the Rabbi Shalom. So what can we do to understand the Rebbe Shalom? The only way we can have even a glimpse, even a mashu of an understanding of what the Rebbe Shalom wants is to learn his Torah. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us in his Torah a glimpse the way we are able to relate to him. So he gave us his chokhmah. He inscribed his chokhmah into a work that we're able to relate to. He took the chokhmah to Lakus and he put it into Chesek Sabbatim. So we're able to get a glimpse of what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is like. Kadosh Baruch Hu is a Racham and a Chanan and an Ebes. And etc. That we get a little bit of a mashu of the Rebbe Shalom. So then and only then we have a fighting chance to understand what the Rebbe Shalom wants of us and how we're supposed to react in those situations that are not spelled out. So says Rebbe Chanan, the corollary of this is, who's going to have a better understanding of the Rebbe Shalom? The person who has a better understanding of the Torah. Who has the best understanding of the Torah? The Beis Din HaGadol. The Beis Din HaGadol, the Dayanim, the Chacham, in each and every generation, Chazal, are supposed to be the ones who best understand the Torah. That's the job. That's the job description. You have to be the greatest of the Chacham, be in the Beis Din HaGadol. So now you take 71 Dayanim who are supposed to make up the greatest of the Chacham in that each and every generation, and they come to a conclusion that you have to do such and such. This is what the Ratzon of the Rebbe Shalom is. You got a good fighting chance that that's probably correct. That's probably what the Rebbe Shalom wants us to do. Comes to Bukhari and says, that's something of the Rabbanan work. That the Chachamim have to look in between the lines. The Chachamim have to look and try to figure out, how would the Rabban Shalom want us to respond in the following case? A nace just happened. A miracle, great miracle of Chanukah just happened. What would HaKadosh Baruch want us to do as a response? So, I don't know. The Rabban Shalom didn't tell us. V'edap Shem Mashalem, it doesn't say what to do when Chanukah happens. HaKadosh Baruch didn't speak about Chanukah. So you need to be a real Tanur Chacham to open up Pashas B'Shalach and read to us Yashimosh and realize, wait a second. You see that the Torah wants us to respond to a nace in a proper way. What's the proper way? Well, what kind of a nace was it? Was it a ruchniyistik nace? Was it a gashmistik nace? On Purim, so the proper response maybe is a suda. On Chanukah, perhaps the proper response is that lokas neighbors is halal. You have to really figure out how would the Rebbe Shalom want us to express our karas hatov to him. So you got to really be in tune. You have to be in sync with what the ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Says Rebbe Chanan, that's what Dinim D'Rabbanim are all about. Dinim D'Rabbanim are what HaKadosh Baruch wants of us, what HaKadosh Baruch expects of us, but didn't actually tell us. It's Ratzon Hashem, not the explicit Ratzon Hashem. It's a Ratzon Hashem that we are supposed to somehow intuitively figure out, and it's very hard to leave it for an individual to figure out. You have to have a very good intuition. You have to be really, really big time Chacham to be able to figure this all out. What is the proper Torah response? What would HaKadosh Baruch want us to do under such and such circumstances? The Sezer B'Chanan, this is a mechayev. This is not a joke. This is a real mechayev in listening. It's not l'sasar, it's not an official formal, it's not part of the Torah that was niklat to us in terms of l'sasar, but it's part of the all-encompassing, all-overreaching mitzvah, chiyuv, so to speak, of listening to what the Ratzon Hashem is. He gives a marshal, Rav Chanan says, so the Torah says in Parshas Balak that Bilam is questioning the Rabbanu Shalom, he wants to go with the people, and the Rabbanu Shalom says, don't go curse them. Bilam says, I want to go curse them, don't go curse them. But finally, what does the Rabbanu Shalom say? He says, go, leichim ha'anoshim. So what does the next pasuk say? Leichar afalokim ki aleichu. So the Mepharshim say, what do you mean, leichar afalokim? Kadosh Baruch Hu just told him to go. So what do you want from Bilam? The Rabbanu Shalom told him to go. So how can the Kadosh Baruch Hu get angry at him? So any parent knows the answer to that question. Why? Because your child asks you for something, right? So the kid asks you for something. So I say, no. So he chapters you again. He says, no. Third time, tenth time, I'm late for my, I'm running out the door. Can I do that? So what's the classic response as you slam the door? Do whatever you want, right? He said, the parent throws up his hands and says, do whatever you want. Then when you come home, you realize the kid did whatever he wanted. He wrote on the wall. He broke his, he threw his brother down the stairs. He did whatever he wanted to do. So I say to him, what did you do that for? So the kid looks at me with a straight face and says, what do you mean you told me to do whatever I want? So what's the answer? The answer is, he should have understood that that's not what I meant. I said, do whatever you want means you're going to do whatever you want anyway. I'm hereby telling you I'm not happy about it. I'm going to give you the choice. I'm going to give you chira chapshus, and I hope and pray you're going to make the right decision. So that's what the Mefarsh, that's what Rabbi Chanan says, that's what it means in Parshas Balak. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't go with him. Don't go with him. But I want him. So the Baruch Shalom says, okay, gizne, you want to go? Do whatever you want. So then, so the Baruch Shalom stuck angry at him. So Bilam doesn't have a tie into the Rabban Shalom, because Bilam was in violation of Ratzon Hashem. So even though the Tzivui Hashem seems to be saying it's okay, but the Ratzon Hashem was saying it's not okay. And the Ratzon Hashem has to be taken into consideration as well. So this touches really on a very, very critical question in terms of Shmiras HaMitzvahs in general. Now you find within Shmiras HaMitzvahs, you find, there's a term that they used to throw around when we were kids, the spirit of the law. It's against the spirit of the law. So what does that mean? It's against the spirit of the law. So I think that's what it means. It's against what the understood Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. So we even within the Torah itself, there are indications of spirit of the law. So the Moshul, like the famous Ramban. Ramban describes in Parshas Emor that a person can be a real Shomer Shabbos. Mamash, hadun v'hadun Shomer Shabbos, on a love of the Araisa without any Shabbos whatsoever. He does everything Kaliachayad and everything Aidegoy and everything is Davashin of his covenant, and he creates all kinds of systems, everything to circumvent the whole Shabbos. And you take a look at Shabbos, it looks like a regular Tuesday. So the Ramban says he didn't violate the halachas of Shabbos, he violated the spirit of Shabbos. And that's a halachic concept, the spirit of Shabbos. Why is that a halachic concept? Because if the Rabban Shalom wrote the Torah Shabbos LaHashem, the Rabban Shalom wrote Shabbos is supposed to be a Shabboson, it's inconceivable that a day that the Rabban Shalom describes as a Shabbos LaHashem is going to be a day that it's going to be business as usual. So there's a certain image of Shabbos that may not be spelled out in the details, and you have to be smart, you have to be a big time chacham to figure out what that image is supposed to be. It's one of the, we'll talk about this, one of the topics, one of the shiurim, trying to cross the week, the image of Shabbos. Okay, anyway, getting back to the story. So this idea that Rabbi Chanan is developing, that all the Rabbanans are in a sense a reflection of this concept of Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So perhaps this is unique to Chanukah in the following sense. The whole sugya for listening to the Chachamim is a sugya in Masech HaShabbos concerning Neres Chanukah. The famous Gemara Heichan Tzivanu, how do we make a bracha shir kiddushan mitzvah l'chalik neshel Chanukah? It's not a real mitzvah d'oraisa, we'll have to make a bracha on this. That's the whole sugya in Shabbos Daf Chaf Gimel. So in the Sifrei, Drush, they talk a lot about this, about how Chanukah has become the description, the model par excellence of a din derabban, even more than Purim in a sense. Purim is the least part of Kisvei HaKodesh, but Chanukah is pure derabban, mamash derabban from beginning to end. So what is unique about the celebration of Chanukah, about the events that brought Chanukah about, that celebrate this notion of the koach of the dinim derabbanan? So perhaps if we go along with Rav Chanan's understanding, then we get a little bit of a better understanding of what's going on. This idea that the Chachamim have the authority, the Chachamim have the ability to speak in a sense on behalf of the Rabban Shalom. When the Chachamim speaks, so they're not speaking as individuals, they're speaking as representatives of what the Dvar Hashem really is, what the Ratzon of Hashem is all about. Where does this come from? What koach is it that the Chachamim have? What enables the Chachamim to be able to speak, to tell us what the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is? So at first glance you would think, Well, they're very, very smart people. They're the highest IQ. They studied, they spent the most years in yeshiva. They spent, they got the 100 and all the b'chinas. So that's what gives them the ability to speak on behalf of Kiddush Baruch Hu. So that's probably, that's an important dimension. You know, if you have people who don't know how to learn, guy doesn't know what it says in the Gemara, doesn't know what the, gets a zero in the b'china, he can be the biggest tzaddik in the world. And I'm not questioning his tzidkus, but I'm not sure that I would want to appoint him to the base of my gadol. So yes, it's no question about it that ability and asmada and level of chacham is critical in terms of being a member of this noble body called Chazal, but that's only part of the story. You know, in secular knowledge, in scientific knowledge, other branches of knowledge, so a person's behavior, a person's midos, really have absolutely no impact on the person's godliness in that particular area. A person could be the Nobel Prize winner in nuclear physics or something and be a maneuver, and I'm not saying he's not, but he could be. It's not a stira. A person could be a tremendous maneuver. A person could be not have any midos whatsoever and be an unbelievable genius, and he'll write the greatest chidushim in the world about nuclear physics, and he'll write the greatest literature in the world, and he'll be the greatest star in there. But he himself in his personal life is a nothing, is a zero. So it's not a stira. Sometimes it is true, sometimes it's not true, but it's not a contradiction. When it comes to Chochmas HaTorah, so that's an absolute contradiction. Rishis Chochmas Yiras Hashem, that's nothing. If a person can know all the Gemaras, know all the Shirim, everything, but he's not Shema Torah Mitzvahs. So there were people in Europe who, there's some of these Bachar, certain very, very prominent yeshivas in Europe in the 1800s. They were tremendous Tamil Chachamim, but they got caught up in certain aspects of the Enlightenment. They were many of them went off the Derech. But they couldn't get away from the Torah. I mean, they loved the Torah. They were going nuts over Tosef, over Kivagas. So there were people who used to sit and write Chiddush Torah on Shabbos. I mean, they weren't Shabbat Shabbos anymore. They weren't Shabbat Torah Mitzvah anymore. They would sit and write Chiddush on Shabbos because they found it intellectually stimulating. So that's not the Torah that we're looking for. That's not what we want. That takes the Torah and puts it into the category of scientific knowledge, scientific study. That's not what we're talking about. That's not a Talmid Chacham. That's a person who's very bright, a person who's very intellectually stimulated. That's not all we want. That's not the model of a Talmid Chacham. The model of a Talmid Chacham is Reishis Chacham, Yiras Hashem. That Torah has to have a Torah Maisim Tovim. For Kiyah, it has to be Maisim Merubim V'Chachmasai. It's got to be Yiras HaKedemus L'Chachmasai. Then and only then does the Torah mean anything. Then and only then can we speak of a person as a Talmid Chacham. In order for a person to speak on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a person is made up of two parts. Ramban, at the beginning of Parshas Bereishis, speaks about how Nasa Adam, Samenekin Musenu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates man, Nasa Adam, Lashon Rabim. So Rashi has his pshat, and others have their pshat. So the Ramban says that Nasa Adam means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu combined two parts of the Bria into the making of a human being. There's the Chelek HaGashmi, there's the Chelek HaBehema, Shabo, and then there's the chelek haruchni shabo. There's the spiritual, there's the divine part. There's the chelek haloka yimal that the Zohar, the Sefer Kabbalah speak about. So a human being is the only one who has, who is both a physical creature as well as a spiritual creature. When a person speaks, when a person is reflecting, he's telling you what his opinion is, he's analyzing something, which chelek of him is speaking? So it depends on what makes up the bulk of who he is. So if a person is a chelech ha-behema, chelech ha-gashmi, person is totally shaku in olam hazeh, so when he speaks, when he says things, that's the chelech ha-behema shebo speaking. Sometimes listen to the way people speak, so talk of the words that they use, the things that the topics that they talk about, so mamash behema is talking, mamash, there's no other way to describe it, that they're talking mamash like the animals in the street. So that's sometimes. When a person is not shaku in olam hazeh, when a person is someone who is dedicated to Shmiras HaTorah Mitzvahs, so in the way he speaks, the way he thinks, the opinions that he presents, are the Chelek HaLoka Shabbos speaking. It's the Ruchnius part of him, it's the spiritual side of him that's speaking. So in order for a person, in order for us to be certain that a person is expressing the Ratzon Elokim, in order for us to be certain that a person is expressing the Chelek HaRuchni Shabbos, it's not enough just that the person has the academic background. Not that enough that the person has an IQ. Not that the person is just smart enough. That's all important. Those are all going to go into the equation of having a correct Pesach Halacha. There's no question about that. But what's even in a sense more important, Olam Gabi Kulam, is the fact that the person is a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, the person is a Baal Midas Tovas, the person is a Yirei Shemayim. When a person is a Yirei Shemayim, and he's speaking on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The words that are coming out of his mouth are the Dvar Hashem. It's the Chelek HaLopa Shebo. It's not the Chelek HaBehema Shebo. It's not like the person who's writing you scientific equations, but he himself is a Menuvel and a Mushchos. No. He himself is a Yirei Shemayim. He himself is a Baal Midas Tovus. He's an Anav. He's a Tzaddik. And he's a Tam Chacham. So then the words that are going to come out, that's Mamash. He's speaking on behalf of the Rav Shalom. He's speaking not on behalf of the Behemoths. He's speaking of the Chelek HaLopa Mimal Shebo is coming out. What happened at the time of Chanukah, as all the Mefarshim speak about this, is that there was a clash, not only in terms of a battle taking place in the hills around the Modian and Yerushalayim. What was going on was really a clash in the world of Chachma. That there were two different Chachmas that were being pinned one against another. There was the Chachma of Yavon, Chachma representative of the culture of the time, against Chachma Satorah. And what was, if you had to really define what was the difference between the two, what was the point of contention between the two? So Chachmas Yavanus was great. It was very smart, it was very highfalutin, it was culture, it was the highest level of culture at the time. But Chachmas Yavanus didn't translate into Midos. Chachmas Yavanus didn't translate into Yirei Shemayim. Chachmas Yavanus was an intellectual, was a cultural, but it didn't mean anything in terms of a person. It's a famous quote that, that's what happened, didn't happen. When a certain Greek philosopher, whoever it was, Aristotle, Plato, it doesn't really matter, when he was caught doing something which was manuvel or mushchas, so he asked him, how can it be? Are you talking the great Aristotle, the great Plato, the great Socrates, whoever his name was, how are you talking that you, the great man of the academy, should be doing such and such an aveira? So again, this is not necessarily a true story, this is just a practical story. What was the response? The response was, Aristotle in the academy, and I'm boss of a dumb outside of the academy. So that distinction is not tenable in Torah mitzvahs. That's not acceptable in Torah mitzvahs. When you have somebody like that, so such a person is not a Talmid Chacham. Doim ha'rav l'malach Hashem tzevokos yivak shetar mipiyu. V'im lav, al yivak shetar mipiyu. You can't learn from such a person. If a person is a manuvel of mushchas outside of the base medish, you can't have the response. Outside of the base medish, I'm a behema. In the base medish, I could say tzaisim and rubik yivegas. That doesn't go. That doesn't jive. A guy who writes Chiddush Torah on Shabbos, so b'mechilas covered his Torah, we're not interested in the Torah. That's not going to fly for us. So the Yom Tov of Chanukah was not just the celebration of a war, not just celebration of candles burning, but it was a celebration of a whole mindset. It was an overcoming of Chachmas HaTorah against that Chachma, whatever that Chachma meant, Chachmas Yavanis of old. It was a celebration of the fact that Chachma doesn't stand on its own. Chachma is not just an intellectual pursuit. Chachma HaTorah is a spiritual pursuit. Chachma HaTorah is Torah and mitzvahs and Maisim Tovim and Midas Tovos that accompany Galus and Torah. That defines the very essence of Chachma HaTorah. That's what Chachma HaTorah is all about. That was the Nitzachon of Chanukah. It's Taka in the post-Chanukah that didn't do Rabbanan make perfect sense. Now we can begin to understand Rabbi Chanan saying. Once you have Chachamim, who live up to those ideals. When you have Tabi Chum, when you have Chazal, who not just great intellectuals, not just great academics, but great tzaddikim, so you have someone who's a great tzaddik and a great Tabi Chum. If a great tzaddik and not a Tabi Chum, so he may be a big tzaddik, but he shouldn't be making passing shaylus. He's a great Tabi Chum and he's a great tzaddik and he's a great Yirei Shemayim. And when he passes in something, when he gives a hara, so that's the Rabban Shalom in a sense speaking, that's the he's in tune with the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then Neiros Chanukah makes a lot of sense. Then Mitzvahs D'Rabbanan make a lot of sense. That's what B'chanan just said. The Chanukah is the time when this idea of Ratzon Hashem, as expressed by Chachmei HaTorah, were not just Chachamim, but Chacham and Tzadikim. So when we're saying, Shroim B'yad Tzadikim, Zeyri B'yad Oiskei Serasecha, it's all the same. If you're just an Osik Terasecha, you're not a Tzadik. If you're an Osik Terasecha, and you're not a Tohar, you're not a Kaddush, if you're not a Kaddush and a Torah and a Tzaddik, so then you Oskei Serasecha, and it's cute, it's a nice triple Torah, it's a nice academic exercise, but it's not that's not Torah. So in order for Torah to be successful, in order for Tamir Chacham to be able to speak on behalf of the Rebbe Shalom, you have to be Tzaddikim as well as Oskei Serasecha. That was all the introduction, that was before we get to Hevel's Chanukah, okay? That was the Jewish part that was supposed to happen at the end of the year, but we did a little backwards. Okay. What did we talk about last year? Hevel's Chanukah? What? What? What are you talking about? Chanukah, okay. If we can talk about the same thing this year? Chanukah hasn't changed much in a year. It's the same thing? Okay, so we have third year in Chazaka. Okay. You remember anything we said? Who remembers? No? Yeah, a little bit. Okay. Chazaka. If we say something different, so then it just shows that we didn't say the halachas properly last year, or we're saying them all this year. So if it says the same thing, then we're probably telling it's probably true. Okay, either that or make the same mistakes every year. Okay. Back to Neres Chanukah. So comes the Gemara in Masechah Shabbos and tells us that the Mokom of Hadlokas Neres Chanukah is critical to the fulfillment of the mitzvah. That the mitzvah is not just stav a mitzvah that you eating matzah you can do anywhere you want. Shake a loop, you can shake a loop wherever you want. You read the Megillah, you can read the Megillah on a desert island, you can read the Megillah in Shul, you can read the Megillah. Yeah, it doesn't make a difference. It's a great mitzvah to do it for Rabim, but it's not an integral part of the mitzvah. When it comes to Hadlokas Neres Chanukah, everything changes. There's a specific Mokom that Chazal ordained that the neiros have to be lit in a very, very specific place. Where is that specific place? So it's a machlekes of Rishonim where the specific place is. So the Gemara speaks about Mibachutz. That's the only thing we know. And that in contrast to the neiros Shabbos, which are lit indoors, the neiros Chanukah are lit outdoors. That's the answer to the famous question. The Gemara says in Shabbos, if you don't have enough money for both neiros Shabbos and for neiros Chanukah, so you should spend the money on neiros Shabbos, not on neiros Chanukah. So the question is this, why can't you use the same neiros for both? So one of the answers that's given is that, what do you mean you stay in there? They're in different places. The Neiros Shabbos are lit indoors, and the Neiros Chanukah are lit outdoors. So Bezman Hazeh, it would have to be a bit kasha for us. Bezman Hazeh, we light everything indoors. But in the old days, when the Neiros Chanukah were lit outdoors, so for Sheitzach, you have to have, it's either one or the other. So where is this Neiros supposed to be, so Moshe's Baal with the kasha, what do you mean? If you can use them for Neiros Shabbos, Neiros Chanukah, you can't use them, because it's also Bano, right? That's your question? Good, that's the Baal Moshe question. Okay, good. Enough of that. So was that what's bothering you? Okay, good. So some Rishonim say, you see from here that Neiros Chanukah are also even b'hanos mitzvah. So the Baal Mor happens to hold that Neiros Chanukah are mutter b'hanos mitzvah. You're allowed to learn by Neiros Chanukah. You're allowed to eat through the Shabbos by Neiros Chanukah. Because according to the Baal Mor, it's not a problem. So the answer is that they were lit outdoors. So where b'chutz, where exactly you're supposed to light the Neiros Chanukah? So as Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, is it supposed to be a Pesach HaBayis, or it's supposed to be a Pesach HaChotzer? In the old days, so you had little private houses that opened up into a courtyard. And then the courtyard would open up into the more public area. So according to Rashi, you're supposed to light the menorah each and every house on the doorway of your house going into the courtyard. And according to Tosfos, no, all the members of the courtyard, each one should bring their own menorah to the Pesach HaChotzer. You want to maximize Pesumei Nisa. So you want to get it to be outside for the Bnei Rishas around. We don't want to get a Pesumei Nisa for 20 people walking around the courtyard. We want to get as much Pesumei Nisa as possible for all the people who are mamish outdoors. So therefore, the menorah should be a Pesach HaChotzer Mibachutz. That's what it says in the Gemara. That's the Ikar Adin. That's what we pass in Shulchan Aruch by Tosfos. That's the real proper place to light a Pesach HaChotzer Mibachutz. Nevertheless, the Gemara already was sensitive to the fact that sometimes this is not practical. The Gemara says sometimes you have a guy who doesn't even have a Pesach HaChotzer. A guy lives in an attic on the second floor. Where's he going to light his menorah? So the Gemara says, no, maniach bevechalon hasamach l'shus harabim. As long as you get a little bit of a Pesach Nisa to the Rishus HaRabim, so that's also okay. Then the Gemara is further sensitive to this and says, sometimes you have a guy who can't even light there. He can't light anywhere near the street because it's a Shas HaSakana. So either the people are going to kill him if he lights in the middle of the street, or people are going to steal his menorah if he lights outside. So what do you want this guy to do? So the Gemara says, all right, so don't bother me. This is also good. So you can put the menorah on the table, and that's also good. So what happened? So on the one hand, we have this Takrani and Yipasim and Nisa. On the other hand, we're saying, well, if you're stuck, so put it on the table. So the Pashas of the Gemara is as follows. The year the takana was, you need Pesumei Nisa. How much Pesumei Nisa do you need? So the takana was to maximize Pesumei Nisa as much as you can get. So each person is different. Each situation is different. So if you live in a place where you can get the ultimate Pesumei Nisa, so gizundai, to put it outside. If you can't get that much, so put it on the window. If you can't even get that, so you get a little bit of Pesumei Nisa. So what Pesumei Nisa do you have? Al Shulchanai. So the answer is you have a B'nai Bayis. Even though it's not a Pesumei Nisa for the outsiders, it's still Pesumei Nisa for the insiders. So that's also considered to be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah. So Tosfos picks up in this Gemara, and Tosfos writes that that's what our minhag is b'zman hazeh. That in Europe, in the 1100s, that about Tosfos writes that nobody likes the menorah outside anymore. We treat this as a shas ha-sakana. We're afraid the goyim are going to start with us, they're going to steal the menorah, they're going to fight with us, they're going to put us in jail for lighting outdoors, fire zones, fire regulations, etc. So Tosfos says, we don't want to start up with the people today. And therefore, everything is indoors, and we fulfill b'zman hazeh with the Gemara called Shas HaSakana, Manich al Shulchan HaVidayim. So that's what the Ramah writes. The Ramah quotes this in Shulchan Aruch. That's what Aminik, at least in the Ashkenazi communities, is that we assume today everything is Shas HaSakana, and therefore Manich al Shulchan HaVidayim, good enough. So should we reevaluate this in every generation? So Pashas is yet. Pashas is that there was a Takana. The Baal HaTosfos didn't make a new, didn't make a chayr, didn't make a law, you're not allowed to light outdoors. The Baal HaTais just looked and said, in 11th century France, it wasn't a good idea to light outdoors, so we'll light indoors. And the Ramal, in 15th century, 1500s in Krakow, said the same thing. So in each and every generation, you got to take a look and see, is it a good idea, is it not such a good idea to light outdoors? So if you live in Eretz Yisrael, which is a very good idea, where no one's going to kill you for lighting outdoors, no one's going to steal your menorah, the whole country lights outdoors, so you should light outdoors, you should light right by our Pesach. We don't have chatzeros anymore. Most people don't live in batim and chatzeros. Most people's batim opens directly to the street. So in the absence of a chatzer, the Shulchan Aruch writes, so everybody holds like Rashi. Even Tosfos, who says, normally you light in a Pesach chatzer, that's only if you have a bayis going to a chatzer going through Shisaravim. If you cut out that middle step, and you have a bayis going directly to a Shisaravim, so everybody agrees with Rashi, you should light it on the Pesach bayis going to the street. So that's what Eretz Yisrael, the minig is most places light it on Pesach bayis. That's the proper din. That's the lechatchila version of Neres Chanukah. What about those who live in Chutz Laaretz? So you have to assess each and every case. So those who live in communities where there's really nothing wrong, nothing's going to happen to you lighting outside. But look at them, and light outside. Those who live in communities that they're nervous, their non-Jewish neighbors are going to get upset, they're going to call the town, they're going to call the fire department, they're going to start knocking on your doors, they're going to drive you crazy, Achil Hashem. Okay, so that's Nekashas HaSakana. So well, most of us live in the second kinds of communities. Lefini is like the Tina concluded. Although there are some people who do light outdoors in Tinek, and I think most people don't light outdoors in Tinek, myself included, for that reason, that even though it's not a Shasa Sekonim, they said no one's going to come and kill you for lighting him, hopefully not, but you may get a call from the fire department, you may get a call from the town or something, you may not light candles sitting around in the middle of the street, so therefore we assume that it's a quasi Shasa Sekonah, and therefore one can light even the Chachila indoors. If you light on the window indoors, then you're getting a shtickle more pesim anis. You're getting like the chalon asamach lushes and rabim. So that's the proper thing to do. So that's the finis idea. Those who mamish light outdoors in Dinek, so they're assuming they're not so scared of the people starting over them. So they follow what it says. And the Gemara with Ikra Din really is that everybody should be lighting outdoors. Tosfos comments in Masechah Shabbos that we who light indoors today, this has a tremendous impact, not only on the actual makom of hadlacha, but it impacts on certain other aspects of hadlacha's Neres Chanukah as well, particularly on the zman of hadlacha. The Gemara tells us a very, very specific guidelines as to when the zman of hadlacha's Neres Chanukah is. The Gemara gives us a beginning zman, a tchilas zman, and a sof zman. So the tchilas zman for hadlacha's Neres Chanukah is mishet tishaka hachama. That's the lashon of the Gemara in Shabbos. What does shkiyas hachama mean? So we thought we know what shkiyas hachama means. We thought it means shkiyas hachama, when the sun dips below the horizon. That's what we usually translate to mean shkiyas. You can't see the ball of the sun anymore. That's what shkiyas means. That's what the Vilna Gaon says. That's what the Rambam says. That's what the many of Hashem say. That's exactly what it means. That's what it means here also, that you light near Chanukah at shkiyas. That's the earliest time. You shouldn't light before shkiyas. You should light at shkiyas, right after shkiyas. That's the time to light near Chanukah. And then there are other Rishonim who say Mishat Hashem Chacham means something different. It means second Shkia, the whole Machlekes Rabbeinu Tam. We spoke about this in the past, right? Rabbeinu Tam's man. No, you never spoke about this. Never. That's a shir in of itself. So maybe another time. So Rabbeinu Tam has a unique understanding in terms of Zmani Hayom. Rabbeinu Tam understood that the sun really sets halachically twice. The first Shkia, what we call Shkia, is not really so significant in Halacha. It's important for Kutchim and for Tosef Shabbos and other things, but it's not really Shkia in the classic sense of the word. The real Shkia, according to Rabbeinu Tam, happens much, much later, almost an hour later, when it's called Shkia Shnia, when the sun is totally gone and you can't see any rays, and it's pretty much pitch black almost outdoors, or completely black outside. That's Shkia Shnia, and that's Mishat Tishaka Chama, according to Rabbeinu Tam. Then there are some who say that even that's not Mishat Tishaka Chama. Some say it's Mamash Tesek Yechavu, which is even later than that, according to Rabbeinu Tam. That's called the Tchilas Zman of Neres Chanukah. So there are different opinions in the Rishonim. When is the earliest possible time to light Neres? Either Shkia, a little bit later than that, a little bit later than that, etc. But we're not focusing so much on the Tchilas Zman, we're talking more about the Sof Zman. When is the latest time to light the Neres Chanukah? So the Gemara says that, since the whole purpose of Neres Chanukah is to get Pesim Anisa, so you have to light at a time when there are people who are going to see it. So if we're lighting the Neres outdoors, so until when do people walk the streets? So the Gemara says that people walk the streets until the last people go home. Who are the last guys to schlep in the last people? So the Gemara explains that the last people are the people who sell wood. Why are they the last ones out? Because everyone needs wood, needs logs of wood for the fire. Chanukah is in the middle of winter time. It's pretty cold outside. So people always need firewood. So people usually don't realize that they go home. Everyone goes to the house, it's dark, and then they realize, oh my goodness, we don't have enough firewood for the night. So they start running around, they're scrounging around to go find firewood. So the really the Talmudoi, these people who used to sell the wood in the marketplace, so they realized they would get, it's like before a snowstorm, so the people who were walking around with salt, they're trying to, you know, you go into any store, so right before a major blizzard, so they hike up the price of the salt. So that's the same thing here also, that people need the wood, it's cold at night, it's dark, people need wood, so the regular Tamadai, they're still walking around the streets, even though it's already dark outside. So the Gemara says, eventually, even these guys go to sleep, how late are they going to be? So it has to be a little bit of light outside, because in the olden days there were no electric lights before Edison, so it was pretty dark outside. So the time of day is not going to walk around 2 o'clock in the morning. They'll bump into each other. So even they're only going to stay in the marketplace when it's still a little bit light outside. So how long is that going to be? So the Rambam writes, it's about a half hour. That's the Rambam was the first one to quantify the shiur. The Gemara says Ashaticha Rechem Rashuk, and the Rambam put that gave it a practical number, a half hour. So what is the Gemara telling us? That you have to aim Halachas Neres Chanukah for that period of time. It's a very, very small window of opportunity. You have to light the menorah sometime after Shkia, or sometime after Tehillah, whatever the Tehillah Zman is, and you have a half hour to go. After that, don't bother lighting anymore. That's what the Gemara says. Then the Gemara quotes another opinion that says, no, that maybe you can even light even after that point of Asher Tichel Rechem Rashuk, and the Gemara leaves it hanging. So the Gemara quotes two possibilities, whether Asher Tichel Rechem Rashuk is Mamash Ma'akev. According to one day in the Gemara, it's Mamash Ma'akev. If you light the menorah after that, it's like lighting in the middle of the daytime. It's like lighting on Sukkot. It's not a mitzvah b'chlau. And according to the other day in the Gemara, no, it's only l'chet chila. So yeah, but you could light it even past that point. So comes Tosis and writes that it's a sveik of the dina. So if a person missed that time of Asher Tichel Rechem Rashuk, we would tell him to light anyway. Nothing to lose by lighting, but you cannot make a bracha. That's what Tosis writes. And then says, then Tosis says, no, then maybe Bizman Azeh, none of this applies. This whole discussion in the Gemara doesn't apply anymore. Why? So says Tosis, in the olden days when the Hadlocha was outside, it was geared towards the Bnei Rishus Rabim. So then the Gemara makes a lot of sense that you have to have Bnei Rishus Rabim there. If it's 2 o'clock in the morning, there's nobody in the street, so then what kind of persimmonis is that? But there's not a zezak tesis that we're not lighting for the Bnei Rishus Rabim. Haraya, we're all living b'shas ha-sakana, so we're lighting indoors. B'nichal shekhanu v'dayo. So zezak tesis, we who are lighting indoors, so we don't have to be so careful about the Asher Tichel Rechem Rashuk. When is Asher Tichel Rechem Rashuk for us? So tesis writes, as long as people are around, people are awake, people are washing the neighbors, you can still light the neighbors even with the bracha. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, let's say you're in the dorm, you're lighting the menorah at 4 o'clock in the morning, it's like middle of the daytime. People are still schmatzering around. 4 o'clock in the morning, people are not walking around the dorm. Finals time. Yeah, come on, finals time. Guys are walking around the dorm, so you can light the menorah as long as you want, as long as there are people still around. That's what Tosis writes. So there are more quotes as Tosis lahalacha. There are more writes that we Ashkenazim, we all light indoors today. Our whole halacha is geared towards the Bnei Abayis. Therefore, we don't have to be so machmir about Asher Tichel Rechem Rashuk. Some poskim disagree with the Ramah, some lechatchila, we try to light as early as possible, but the ikamikra, then we paskin. For whatever reason, the person is lighting 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, that's perfectly okay. You can still recite a bracha, we don't have any problems with that. There's a machloek, is a contemporary poskim, not a contemporary anymore, but the later poskim, between the Mishnah Berurah and Moshe Feinstein, about what if everybody went to sleep? Is that also okay? So the Mishnah Berurah says that's a problem. The Mishnah Berurah says that even according to the Balei HaTosfos, who hold that you're allowed to light the whole night, that's assuming that somebody's awake. Otherwise, you have no Bnei Rishus Rabim, no Bnei Abayis, nobody sees the menorah. Just dam to light a menorah for nobody, says the Mishnah Berurah, that you can't do. And Rav Moshe says, even that you can do. Rav Moshe says, let's say a guy lives on his own. Guy lives in his private apartment up on the 12th floor. There's nobody seeing the menorah. There's no members of his family, no roommates, nothing. So he doesn't like the menorah. He also likes the menorah. So comes Rav Moshe and says, of a guy whose family went to sleep, so he's like the single guy who doesn't have anyone to light for. So B'diavad, he could also light the menorah, he could also recite a bracha. Different opinions about this. But again, this idea that the Zman Hatlocha has drastically changed with Zman Hazeh is a reflection of the fact that the Mokam Hatlocha has drastically changed as well. One could argue that even if one is lighting outdoors, maybe the Zman Hatlocha has also changed with Zman Hazeh, because it wasn't like there was a takana that you have to light within Asher Tichel Rechem Rashuk. The takana was, you have to light at a time when people are walking the streets. So the days of the Rambam, the days of the Mishnah, the days of the Gemara, so that was a half hour. Bizman Hazeh, that's different. Bizman Hazeh, everyone's in the street. The traffic goes up and down the street, so even we don't live in such a main thoroughfare, but 9 o'clock at night, there are no cars. There are loads of cars 9 o'clock. 10 o'clock at night, there are also cars. 11, there are also cars. It's 3 in the morning, Taka, there aren't that many cars going down the Rechta Court. But till 10, 11 o'clock at night, there are plenty of cars. So one could argue that even Aliba da Gemara, even if you insist that you have to light outdoors today, Maybe you could argue that Tichel Rechem and Ashok has changed, because Tichel Rechem and Ashok is not an absolute halachic shear. It's more of a reflection of what the society is. If the society is that people are walking around the streets, then that's also called Asher Tichel Rechem and Ashok. If that's true, that Asher Tichel Rechem and Ashok changes, so then that may change L'chumra as well. I mean, we try to maximize to something said, but yeah, we did not even one person. If what we're saying is correct, that Asher Tichel Rechem and Ashok has a whole new meaning in post the days of Thomas Edison, so we have to take into consideration what the travel habits, what the thoroughfare habits of each particular society is. This may be a tremendous chumrah, because the whole shear of lighting for half hour, the fact that it says the Shulchan Aruch you have to put half hour of oil in, that's based on the fact that we want the lighting to last Asher Tichel Rechem and Ashok. If you tell me that Asher Tichel Rechem and Ashok means 11 o'clock at night. Let's say this Amir Hashem, this for tomorrow night, we'd like the menorah at 4 o'clock tomorrow, and it should last Asher Tichel Rechem and Ashok. So we usually translate that to mean it's got to last a half hour after dark. Whenever the Zman Adlach is, Shki, it says, whatever you pick the Zman Adlach, it's got to last a half hour after that. So if you're going to tell me that Asher Tichel Rechem and Ashok means something else, it means a whole new ballgame today. It means the amount of time that people are walking the streets on Rechta Court on Friday night. So you guys were spazzing around last week, what time? 1 in the morning you guys were walking the streets. So did you meet anybody else walking? Shalom Zocha, guys are walking and coming and going, so that's still Asher Tichel Rechem and Ashok. So one can argue that you have to put in enough oil tomorrow night to go from 4 o'clock till 12 o'clock. You put 8 hours of oil. You need a nice Chanukah for that. That's quite an amount of oil. So that's what the Brisker Rav held. The Brisker Rav is married like that. He held that Bizman is there when you light the menorah, you have to put in enough oil, not that it lasts a half hour. It's got to last till the end of traffic for that night. So what was the end of traffic for that night? So the famous mice, who knows the famous mice of the Brisker Rav? The Edison Theater, okay? The famous Edison Theater. Anyone knows where that is? Anyone knows where the famous Edison Theater in Yerushalayim is? You shouldn't know. It hasn't been showing movies in about 50 years. It's right by Kikar Shabbat, right? When you're going, if you're standing at Kikar Shabbat and you're facing towards the center of town, like you'd be walking up to Yafo, so instead of going to the left, right, which would take you straight up to Yafo, you go straight like towards King George. So you go up you go up to the right, right? There's a little, like a fork up to the right. If you go up there about a block or so, on the left side, there used to be a condemned movie theater. It's knocked down now, but it was called the Edison Theater. It used to actually stand, it's still the Edison Theater. I don't think it's there anymore. Right? Anyone know those streets well? I don't think it's there anymore. I think it's been knocked down. It was supposed to be turned into I think Satma bought it out. It's supposed to build some like apartment buildings or something, and I don't know if it ever happened or not, but that was the original Edison Theater. So that was a big social scene of Yerushalayim many years ago. So demographics have changed the neighborhood a little bit, and that wasn't the greatest attraction anymore. So most people who live in that area are not running off to the movies anymore. But when the Brisker Rav lived there in the 1940s and 1950s, so the Brisker Rav lived across the street from the Edison Theater. So they say from the Brisker Rav that he would put in enough oil, he put in big enough candles that should last until the end of the last showing of that night. So the last show of the movie was started at 10 o'clock, I don't know, 9:30 movie, whatever. So the last people come out of the Edison movie theater at 11:30 at night. So the Brisker Rav was mocked for that his candles would go. He lit like Yerushalayim, like Briskas. He lit they would put in enough oil that should last for 8-10 hours or so. They should go past the last showing of the movie because he was cheshish. That was called Asher Tichel Rechem and Ashok. This man is that. Most people are not cheshish for that. Most people just assume that we get the better end of Asher Tichel Rechem and Ashok. We don't take the worse end. It means we have a hefter of light later today, but somehow we're not mechuyif to kach tikta chacham. If it goes a half hour, that's good enough. It doesn't have to go for 10 hours. As long as it goes for the minimum half hour, that's still a fulfillment of Asher Tichel Rechem and Ashok, even though we're very, very makely. You know, it's a little bit of a stira, not exactly so glad, but that's what we usually assume today. This idea that Hadlokas Neiros Chanukah has changed drastically from the days of Chazal, the days of the Mishnah, till today, the days of the Mishnah, they used to light the Neiros Chanukah Mamash outdoors. How do we know that, by the way, that they lit Neiros Chanukah outdoors in the days of the Mishnah? They don't bring me a riot from the Mishnah? It's Mishnah Bava Kama, all right. There's no Mishnah in Shas that speaks about the chiyuv of lighting Neiros Chanukah. There's brises about it, there's Tanoim speak about it, Rishon LeZion spoke about it, but there's no Mishnah Beferish that says you're mechuyav to light Neiros Chanukah. But the Mishnah in Bava Kama, in the sixth parak, talks about a shaila if a person's Ner Chanukah tipped over and caused a nezek outdoors, is he chayav or is he potter? So you see clearly that they were lighting Neres Chanukah outdoors. They see clearly they were lighting Neres Chanukah. They see clearly they were lighting Neres Chanukah outdoors in the days of the Tanoim. So there are four places, no, where Chanukah is mentioned in the Mishnah. The halachas of Chanukah are not discussed in the Mishnah explicitly, but there are four places where the Mishnah speaks about Chanukah. You know where? It's a trivia question. Bikurim, because the zman of bringing Bikurim is Me'atzeros V'yad Chanukah. So Chanukah is mentioned there beferish. In Rosh Hashanah, when the Mishnah speaks about which months you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to go be Mekadosh as a Chodesh, Al Kislev Me'a Chanukah. Where else? It's Baba Kama Mishnah, and there's another one. Mishnah Megillah, in Sugis of Kriyas HaTorah, because what are you laying at each time? So it says, Chanukah, you're laying at Parshas Nesiim. So Chanukah exists in the days of Mishnah. But it's all the din and beferish about Chanukah not in the Mishnah itself. To get back to the story. So in the days of the Mishnah, they were lighting outdoors, but as long as everything's changed, so that may have caused another interesting switch in Neres Chanukah. That's a that appears already in the Rishon, appears in the Rivash, the following Shaila. There was a minhag that developed sometime somewhere in Klal Yisrael to light Neres Chanukah in Shul. We don't have any mention of that in the Gemara itself. But this minhag already existed in the days of the Rishonim, that Timin Chamayim, when somebody gets up and makes brachas and he lights the menorah in Shul. So a very, very strange minhag. I mean, we can understand why it is. You know, we can philosophize about the minhag a lot, but at the end of the day, it's only a minhag. What's strange about it is that we recite a bracha on it. Now, that in and of itself is not so strange, because there is a machlekes of Rishonim in general that we recite brachas and minhagim. It's a famous machlekes of Menatam and the Rambam, about when you say Halal and Rish Chodesh, you say, make a bracha now. The Gemara says Beferish and Tainis, that Halal and Rish Chodesh is not a din, it's not a chiyuv, it's just a minhag. In the days of the Gemara, it actually wasn't even a universal minhag. The Gemara says that Rav came to a certain place, and he heard they were saying Halal and Rish Chodesh, he didn't know what they were doing, what's today, why are they saying Halal today, couldn't figure it out. So finally he realized it's Rish Chodesh, and then he was going to stop them, then he realized they were only saying Chatzial, so Chatzial, do whatever you want. So it wasn't even a universal minhag. But today it's become a universal minhag. Says Mechlekes Rishonim, do we say a bracha or not? So the Rambam says, how can you make a bracha? And it says bracha levatala. The Rambam says that you don't only make a bracha seven hagim. The Rambam compares this to a Gemara in Sukkah, where the Gemara in Sukkah says that when you shake Hoshanas, you bang Hoshanas and Hoshana Rabba. So the Gemara says there's a Mechlekes whether the taking of Hoshanas and Hoshana Rabba was a mitzvah derabbanan, or whether it was a minhag, whether it was a mitzvah neviim, or whether it was a minhag neviim. It was instituted the days of Chag HaZechai Malachim, the days of the Nevi'im HaCharonim, so they instituted this idea of taking Hoshanas in Shul and Hoshana Rabbah. So the Gemara Zeshayla, was it a real Takonas HaChamim that the Nevi'im instituted, or was it just a Mirg B'Alma? So Gemara says, my Nafkamina, Nafkamina, Gabi Brachas. So if it's a Minig Nevi'im, then you don't make a Bracha on it. If it's a Takonas HaChamim, then you do make a Bracha on it. So we happen to pass it, it's a Minig, that's why in fact we don't make a Bracha. So the Rambam says that this is true for all Minhagim. You don't make a bracha in a minhag. A bracha is a shekhi dishon mitzvah isa v'tzivanu. Not a shekhi dishon b'minhoga v'tzivanu. A bracha is on a mitzvah, not on anything. If it's not a mitzvah, there is not a mitzvah, there's no bracha. And Rabbi Natam is quoted by Tosfos saying it's not true, that not all minhagim are the same. Certain minhagim you don't make brachas on, certain ones you do. And Rabbi Natam tries to show you what the rule is. And there's a famous biskarov to try to elaborate upon what exactly is the yisod. When do minhagim warrant a bracha? When do minhagim not warrant a bracha? So Rabbi Natam paskins that Halal Rish Chodesh warrants a bracha, and that's what most of us do. The Sfarim don't, the Tamei Hagra don't, but most regular Ashkenazim do recite a bracha on Halal Rish Chodesh. So comes to Shulchan Aruch of Chanukah and quotes this Rivash and says, your light Neres Chanukah in Shul, even though it's only a minhag, and you make a bracha on it. So it's a pilei point, because Bishlam, according to the Ramah, who says that certain, the Ramah paskins like Rabbi Natam, that certain minhagim you do make a bracha on. So I understand. So this, for whatever reason, Neres Chanukah and Shul falls into that category of minhagim that would require a bracha. But according to the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch in Hukos Hashchag, the Shepaskins like the Rambam, that you never recite a bracha on minhagim is an absolute no. It's a bracha levatola. So manishtana halal and shul. Why are you making a bracha on halal and shul? Halal and shul is only. Why are you making a bracha on menorah and shul? Menorah and shul is only a minhag. So it's a minhag. A minhag doesn't require a bracha. So it's a pella. We're not sure where this minhag came from in the first place. The light and shul didn't exist in the days of the Mishnah. All it does exist in the Gemara. And all of a sudden it appears yesh me'ayin in the days of the Rishonim. And number two, it's such a strange minhag that you recite a bracha on it, which breaks the rules according to the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam. So what's going on with this lighting in shul? So there are different suggestions that have been given. So there is a fascinating suggestion, a historic slash halachic suggestion that's given by Rav Sternbach in the Sefer Mu'adim Uzmanim. I referred to it on Shabbos, right, in the Shir? Didn't I say, I quoted how this guy was heard the shtickle from Rav Sternbach. This was it. It was about this one, right. So Rav Shlomrich writes in his Sefer that he thinks that the minhag of lighting a shul developed at the following time in Jewish history. He thinks it was the same time when the Balei HaTaisus observed that we're no longer lighting outdoors, we're now lighting indoors. So he says the real takana of Neves Chanukah was to be mefarsim as a mitzvah to the rabbim. That's the real punchline, that's the real mitzvah. Elohat, if you're stuck, it's a shasal chak, you can't do it, you can't do it in the right way. So nebuch, you can still light the menorah inside, it's still even kvetchat, even bekoshi, you can recite a bracha, it's still a little bit of a prisma nisa. But there's something which is very deficient in Neves Chanukah b'zman hazeh. The real takana, the etzem takana of lighting for the rabbim, that doesn't really exist b'zman hazeh. So Shtumbach suggests that maybe what the Rishayim had in mind was as follows. That it's true we can't light our real menorahs in Rabbim anymore, because we're Pnei HaSakana, but maybe we could do like the next best thing. Maybe what we could do is, we can have a hadlocha, which you're not really yaitse in the classic sense of the word, because it's not really a bayis, so it's not really the mitzvah of Neves Chanukah, but you can have a hadlocha b'mokom Rabbim. And if you have a hadlokah b'makom rabim, aren't you? Where are you going to do this rabim? What? You're going to put up a menorah in the middle of the town square? So, not shaykh. You're going to put a menorah in Madison Square Garden? Not shaykh. You're going to put it, where does the olim go? In the shul. That's where everyone comes. Everyone comes to daven mincha ma'arif together. So you have the rabim there. You have all the people in town there. And everyone's coming to daven mincha ma'arif. So middle of the winter, 4 o'clock. So everyone's there. So comes Rav Shtermbach and says that at the same time when the Rishonim realized that we're losing out that dimension of rabim, so in our regular halachas Neres Chanukah, so to substitute for that, they instituted this minhag of lighting in shuls to create that dimension of rabim. So now the question is, okay, it's a beautiful minhag. Now we understand the source of the minhag. We understand what prompted the Rishonim to institute it, but it doesn't answer the bracha question. So tachas, what right do we have to make a bracha? So Shtumbach quotes up sick, calls up, you know, off the regular source that seems to say that the original takana in the days of the Chash Benoim, they used to light the Mekomis HaRabim. That was the original takana. Was we want to be mefaris b'sa neis as much as we can, as much as we can. We'll light mamish in the town squares, and we'll make these parades, and we'll light in the wherever we can. And then the Chacham said that, you know what? Well, for whatever reason, whatever causes change is beyond the scope right now. The Chacham revamped the takana a little bit and said that we're going to make the hadlokah is going to be in each person, each house for themselves, but it should also be for Makom Rabim. So rather than doing it mamish in the middle of the town squares, in the middle of Lifnei Amba Eda, each person will do it in their own house, get a little bit of Lifnei Amba Eda. That's basically close up some mocha from somewhere, that's how he thinks the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah was instituted. So he says, when a person lights a shul today, it's not that we stop making up something new. The Chana Shemini Hekedim, we're going back to the real Takana. The original Takana was Chazal wanted to maximize B'sumin Nisa. So in different times, you had different ways to maximize B'sumin Nisa. So B'sman Chazal, the B'sman HaMishnah, B'sman the early, until the days of the Rishonim, so the best way to get B'sumin Nisa was Isha Pesach HaBayis, Isha Pesach HaChotzer. But B'sman HaZeh, that no longer is an option. So we got to go back to other kinds of B'sumin Nisa. So the other kinds of B'sumin Nisa that we have are to light in Mekom HaSeh Rabim. So whenever you have a Mekom Rabim, that's called by definition a Incha B'sumin Nisa Dor Mezu, and that's part of the Ika Takona. It wasn't a newfangled thing the Rivash started in the 1300s. That was part of the original Takona Chash B'Noim, to light in Mekom HaSeh Rabim. So he says, therefore, he thinks you can make brachas on this. In the days of the Mishnah, the days of the Gemara, when they were lighting outdoors, anyway, so they were getting the maximum B'sumin Nisa, but you have to light in shul for. Who are you getting in shul that you haven't covered on in your alleyway? I'm lighting at the Pesach HaChotzer. Everyone's walking on the way to shul, they're seeing my menorah. They're walking home from shul, they're seeing my menorah. So I got as much B'sumin Nisa as I want. This man is there, that's not an option. I got to take my menorah and stuff it in behind closed doors in my window, and nobody sees it. So to make up for that, so I go back to the lighting in the shul. Lighting in the shul is part of the Ika Takana of B'sumin Nisa. That's where Shtumbach all razzle dazzle, very historical / halachic interpretation of what's going on. What's interesting for our purposes is that he's also addressing the same thing that Taisa is saying, is that something changed dramatically in Neres Chanukah. What changed was we had to shift the place of Hadlocha. That Hadlocha Bizman HaMishnah was outdoors, Hadlocha Bizman is indoors. That changed the Zman HaMitzvah, and that changed, that introduced us this whole new minhag of lighting in shuls. So others disagree with this whole shtickle tire about the shuls, others give much simpler understandings of what the lighting in shuls is all about. But at least according to him, according to Shtumbach's Mahalach, it's also an example of something that changed because of this reality that they can no longer light the menorah where they really wanted to, namely to light it at Pesach HaChotzer. Okay, what's it? Stop it now. So what's our schedule? The schedule is Sunday.